Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. Let's start with this book excerpt from AARP, the magazine, My Wild Ride Through Appalachia, How Job Loss, the Pandemic, and a Cancer Scare Led Me to Rediscover My Love Affair with America. This is adapted from this person's upcoming book, Mailman, and it's by Stephen Starring Grant. The worst-kept secret in corporate America is that marketing works. I have been a successful, highly paid strategist for some of the biggest companies in the world, helping the glass tower crowd understand how regular people make the wheels on the bus go round and round. But marketing is notorious for being the canary in the coal mine of corporate spending. And now my latest gig was abruptly ended due to the onset of COVID-19. I was a husband and a father of two teenage girls, and everybody in our house up on Brush Mountain in Blacksburg, Virginia, was counting on me to keep them in the upper middle class. Getting a new marketing job was going to be a near impossibility for the foreseeable future. It was certainly not going to happen before my health insurance ran out in a couple of weeks, which was a problem because I had cancer. I had only known about the cancer for a couple of months. My father had survived prostate cancer, as had his brother, my Uncle Rich, so I wasn't too worried, honestly. My urologist told me the malignancy was contained inside the prostate. The tissues uncovered in the biopsy were submillimetric, thus too small for the MRI to detect. My cancer was as benign as cancer gets. But what had seemed manageable now loomed as an existential issue. I was about to become one of the undoctored in America, while I knowingly carried a disease that could kill me. I needed money, so I took a job carrying the mail in and around Blacksburg, where I had grown up, departed from for the bright lights, and returned to a few years later. And I fell back in love with America during that year. I feared for her and prayed for her, even though before I started carrying the mail, I did not spend much time in prayer. But here in midlife in my hometown, I found myself working in a different type of job, and I became a different kind of person. I was the guy with the goods, and I carried the candy and the respirators and the dog food and the lube and the heirloom tomato seeds, the hot rod magazines, the handwritten pleas from incarcerated uncles, the scientific journals, tabloid-sized book reviews, model train sets, illustrated children's Bibles, the hand-painted postcards from artistic cousins and estranged girlfriends. The story I told myself was this. I had joined a brotherhood that stretches back to Benjamin Franklin, to men on horseback and in biplanes. I had become a flag-wearing, sworn federal officer in a position of trust, the duly appointed agent of the United States government in a time of national crisis, the dedicated and beloved civil servant of the people. I was the mailman. I'm hauling ass up the hollow, down the dry dirt road, past the sign that reads, In-State Maintenance, driving a 2001 Ford Explorer from the right-hand seat. My left leg is stretched across space where the center console had been torn out to allow easy access to the pedals. Left arm stretched across to the steering wheel with its sloppy linkage, the leaking power steering fluid, an industrial aromatherapy. Here on the northern side of the draw is the land of permanent shade. All the trees are scrub pine. The road narrows enough that I can reach out and feel my fingertips being whipped by the needles as I drive by. This isn't some purpose-built vehicle. I'm driving a plain Jane, factory basic, left-hand drive car. But for slinging mail on back roads, it is hard to beat the Explorer. Ford Tough. This rusty beast has survived long enough its planned obsolescence, because this thing has got a soul, man. Made in America magic that is still pulsing 19 hard years after it rolled off the assembly line in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm driving as fast as the old crate will go. I am behind schedule, and the route is almost 60 miles long. But I'm lost. Not spatially lost, geographically. I know exactly where I am. I'm where I grew up, in the sedentary Blue Ridge Mountains, the heart of the Appalachians. What I'm feeling lost in is the sense that I don't know what I'm doing, lost in confronting the reality of being back in my hometown at 50 years of age delivering the mail. Down here at the level of individual mailboxes, time works differently. What time is it? What day is it? It's parcel time, the only kind of time that matters anymore, and I've got a delivery to make. In the back is a cardboard box over 3 feet long and about 6 inches deep. The return address reads Musashi Katana, Little Rock, Arkansas. I didn't watch Kurosawa films over and over when I was a kid to not know what those words mean. There is a goddamn sword in that box, and the Weird Sisters of the United States Postal Service have sent me here to deliver it. In a clearing at the end of the dirt driveway is a single wide trailer with a small deck out front. I exit the Explorer and carry the box toward the trailer with both hands, supporting it from underneath like the guy with the sword on a pillow, processing up to the Queen in Westminster Abbey. Through the sliding glass front door of the trailer, I see into the living room, a space dominated by a TV. The man who lives here pulls open the sliding glass door and jogs out. He is lean in a baggy blue tee, shorts, and flip-flops, with long, crow-black hair, a buck folding knife and a leather snap sheath on his belt. Another guy, like me, who never feels quite dressed in the morning without a belt and a knife. When he sees the box I'm carrying, he stops. Oh, goddamn. Sometimes you get the feeling that you have been brought somewhere to do a thing by powers larger than yourself. Hey, man, I think this is your sword, I say. I can feel myself smiling. Now he starts to smile. Oh, goddamn. What did you get? A katana? A nokdachi? I ask. That gets me an appreciating look. His tone becomes serious. No, man. Nothing Japanese. European. Two-handed sword. I got that second pandemic check, and I knew I was finally going to get the thing. You want to see it? Hell yes, I want to see it, because I can feel it now, too. He takes the box from my arms and lays it in the grass as gently as if it were a sleeping child. Have you ever been there when someone had gotten exactly what they wanted? Something that they have wanted for as long as they can remember? Something maybe unless yet changed or charged with mystic power? An idea that had been carried around for years and was now landing in reality as 3 long feet of tempered steel? He had his pocket knife out in a flash and cuts through the packing tape. Resting in a cardboard cradle is a two-handed sword in a black leather scabbard. He takes its grip in his right hand and the scabbard in his left, and in a single move, smooth stroke, looses the blade, which, as if someone had dubbed in a sound effect, rings like singing silver. Woo! Yay! This is Anduril, Flame of the West, reforged from the shards of Narsil by the elves of Rivendell. I respond, instantly pulling the Lord of the Rings reference from thin air. We looked at each other. Yeah, man, the blade that smote Sauron. It is one of the most intimate moments I've ever had with a stranger. We aren't up a hollow deep in the Blue Ridge Mountains, lost in the radio hole at the center of one of the longest rural routes in Blacksburg, Virginia, post office. We are in the middle of a myth. A molten dream of a place where great deeds, brave words, and the right sword in the right hand can make a broken world whole again. I was alive in a place where the possibilities of a job taken in desperation played out against a wild, mutating, horrific, chaotic, insulting, stultifying, dangerous, edifying, and sometimes transcendent experience of dealing with my fellow Americans during a national emergency. I got to put a sword in this man's hand at this particular moment in time, in the crabgrass and broken glass front lawn of his single-wide aluminum-sided trailer. A stranger and I reenacted the Tolkien-writ moment when Elrond calls on Aragorn to put aside the ranger and become the man he was meant to be. I get it. We all want a sense of purpose. I could probably tell myself I was there out of a sense of civic duty, that I was placed here by the hand of Providence, by Whitman, democratic impulse, by the manifest will of the American people, by the authority of the Postmaster General. I can say with a straight face that all those things were true, and I would be lying if I didn't confess that I perversely enjoyed the endurance sport aspect of it, even the endangering of my physical and mental health. A lot of the time it was just fun. It was like being back in the Scouts again, doing a good turn daily. Yes, I had to pepper spray a pair of vicious mutts bent on making me one of the rare mail carriers who get mauled to death by dogs. I was nearly felled by hypothermia and by a horde of angry wasps and unhappy I had disturbed their mailbox nest. But I also bonded with an Afghanistan vet staying with his parents who was pleased to show off to a fellow admirer his new MIA 6.5mm Creedmoor battle rifle. I reconnected, now as their mailman, with several men and women I grew up with, all of us recognizable, but also very different. In short, being a mailman expanded my soul. This was excerpted from Mailman, my wild ride in delivering the mail in Appalachia and finally finding home, by Stephen Starring Grant. Grant, 55, is a brand strategist and has worked as an adjunct college professor in Blacksburg, Virginia. Now going to AARP, the bulletin, let's look at an item entitled Your Money, Live Well for Less, Your Brain on Bargains. This is by Lisa Lee Freeman. Why you should look twice at any price when you're shopping. Why do even smart shoppers sometimes make not-so-smart choices? According to Nick Colinda, it is because of how our brains are wired. Colinda, a marketing consultant specializing in the psychology of pricing, says people can be swayed not just by the price of an item, but also about how that price is presented. Just changing the price tag's color or size can make you think you're getting a better deal, as he says in his new book, Methods of Pricing. Ultimately, price is perception. I talked to Colinda about the effects price tags can have on shoppers. Here are 10 of the most fascinating triggers that can get you to spend money. 1. The color red. It grabs attention and seems to make shoppers less price conscious. That's especially true for men who, according to studies, are drawn to the color. They find women more desirable when they wear red and prefer sports teams in red uniforms. My take is that men see red and quickly assume that it indicates savings, Colinda said. 2. Unusual fonts. It takes more time and effort to read ugly-looking letters and numbers. That increased difficulty makes you stop and focus on the deal. 3. Type size. Small type can convey a good deal, Colinda says. If the price tag is visually tinier than the original price, if the sale price is visually tinier than the original price, it seems to be lower. But large type can also grab your attention if it appears that the retailer is promoting a good product. 4. Wow words. Pairing less descriptors with prices can also make you feel you're getting a better deal. In one study, a small $5 fee seems cheaper than a $5 fee one was in italics. Other phrases that can have the same effect. Only $9.99, just three payments of $29, and for a low price of $89.95. When numbers are paired with text, Colinda says, your brain merges the two, associating the price with the words. Signs and banners, number 5. Even if an item isn't on sale, using bright, colorful signage can boost sales. Your brain assumes that because there's a banner, there must be some kind of special promotion that you should take advantage of right now, Colinda says. Number 6, positioning. Prices are often placed on the left because studies show prices on the right feel heftier. In countries where people read from left to right, the left naturally becomes the visual fulcrum. Imagine there's a diving board. The further away the price is placed from the base, the more its weight will bend the board. Another contributing factor, when arranging quantities from low to high, left to right readers tend to place the lowest number on the left. Anchoring, number 7. Our brain is biased toward the first number that comes into our head, the so-called anchor. When you see a price of $3.99, for example, you focus on the leftmost digit because that's what you see first. Although the price tag is nearly $4, we anchor on the 3, making a difference of 1 penny seem like a dollar. Number 8, reference prices. Advertised prices, suggested retail prices, past prices, and competitor prices are all points of reference that our brains use to assess a deal. But they can be deceiving. If, for example, an item's original price is inflated, a sale price seems more attractive, Colinda says. Reference prices can also get you to overlook add-on charges. When you click on an airline ticket deal, your brain is likely to downplay fees you run into afterward for carry-ons and other extras. That's because your brain is still running the simulation of paying the low price you first encountered, he says. Tip screens, number 9. When a cashier swivels a screen around for you to pay and choose a tip amount, a private decision suddenly becomes a public one. In a split second, Colinda writes, you battle a flurry of questions. Should I tip? How much? Is that enough? Can other people see it? Will they think I'm cheap? As a result, tip amounts are higher on visible devices, according to a new study Colinda cites. And finally, coupons. They shift your attention from the price you're paying to the amount you're saving. When you look at a price tag that says $20 marked down to $15, your brain is focused on the final price in that scenario, Colinda says. But if you have a $5 coupon, you're focused on the amount you're saving. That mindset is more pleasing. The author of this piece, Lisa Lee Freeman, is a journalist specializing in shopping and saving strategies. She was editor-in-chief of ShopSmart magazine from Consumer Reports. Now, a FraudWatch article, got a new digital friend? Be wary. Scammers are turning your hobbies and interests against you. This is by Matt Alderton. Romance scams have been a reliable source of income for digital criminals for years, but a new, more subtle variation of that fraud is seeing a major upsurge, reports AARP Director of Fraud Victim Support, Amy Nofzinger. Instead of seducing vulnerable people online with promises of romance, crooks are luring people into digital traps simply by convincing them they share a common interest. A recent caller to the AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline, who asked not to be named, met someone on a friendship app who seemed to share a lot of interests. When the new friend claimed to be locked out of his bank account, he asked for a loan via Cash App. He promised to repay the money, but never did. She ended up losing $10,000. Another caller met someone while playing online video games. When they asked for money, she agreed to help, ultimately losing over $100,000 sent via Bitcoin and gift cards. These are online romance scams with a twist, Nofzinger said. Instead of pretending to fall in love, the criminals act like they're sharing your hobbies or struggles. Whether it's a sober support group or a Facebook group for classic car lovers, scammers are slipping into these spaces just to gain your trust and take advantage of it. Friendship scams are rapidly increasing among the rip-offs, consumers report, according to the Better Business Bureau. The scams follow a predicted script, says Jason Zirkel, a certified fraud examiner and training director at the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners. Scammers lurking on sites like Facebook, Instagram, or Reddit initiate contact by sending direct messages or commenting on posts. They often use empathy and mirroring, appearing to be in the same circumstances as you, to establish deep emotional connections quickly. Eventually, conversations move to platforms that are harder to trace, such as encrypted text messaging apps like WhatsApp and Telegram. Finally, scammers invent a personal crisis to ask for financial help, often requesting money via non-traditional channels like gift cards, cryptocurrency, or peer-to-peer payment apps. Since people don't usually question platonic relationships as much as romantic ones, scammers can be harder to spot. The relationship building is a little bit more subtle and requires a little bit more trickery, Zirkel says. For that reason, I think friendship scams are more insidious than romantic ones. Friendship scams are becoming even more insidious with the help of artificial intelligence, according to Roy Zur, co-founder and CEO of Charm Security, whose fraud protection platform uses AI to prevent scams. A male crook living overseas, for example, can use AI to pose as an older American woman who lives in the South and is a master gardener. If he meets you in a Facebook gardening group, he can use ChatGPT to translate his native tongue into perfect English, infuse his writing with Southern dialect, generate insights and observations about growing flowers and vegetables suited to Southern climates, and even fabricate real-looking images of his female alter ego working on rose bushes. It makes it feel much, much more real, Zur says, and it makes it much easier to do this type of crime in the first place. The risk of scams shouldn't scare people out of digital relationships, experts say. Just keep these tips in mind to build online connections safely, says Iskander Sanchez-Rola, director of AI and innovation at Gen, which owns cybersecurity brands Norton, Avest, and LifeLock. Be skeptical of sudden closeness. Scammers want to build rapport fast. So when a new connection gets intimate soon after you meet them, proceed with caution. Beware of secrecy and evasion. If online friends want you to keep your relationship secret, or if they avoid speaking on the phone, having a video chat, or meeting you in person, they may be hiding something. Don't send money. Eventually, inevitably, scammers always ask for money. If someone you've never met in person solicits you for cash, it's a red flag and a red light. Requests that are urgent or involve non-traditional payment methods like gift cards or crypto are especially suspicious. And finally, seek a second opinion. If something about a new friendship feels off, consider confiding in a trusted friend or family member to get a fresh perspective. There also are tools you can use to sniff out scammers. Norton Genie, AI Scam Detective, and Scam Sniper all use AI to detect likely scams by analyzing text messages, social media posts, emails, and websites. Matt Alderton, the author of this piece, is a frequent contributor who specializes in fraud, technology, and travel. Now let's look at a Q&A, Your Money, Social Security Simplified. My wife's first husband, whom she was married to for 27 years, died in 1996. She and I got married 4 years later. In 2008, when she turned 62 and started collecting Social Security payments, she was told she couldn't get benefits on his record. Was that correct? Yes, it was. It is true that a widow who is remarried may be able to collect survivor benefits from her first husband's Social Security account, but that's only if she remarries after turning 60 and your wife was in her 50s when the two of you wed. Her situation will change if you happen to die before your wife. In that case, she would be able to get a monthly survivor benefit from either your account or her first husband's record, whichever would lead to higher payments. The difference between that benefit and her own retirement benefit would be added to her monthly payment. Next question. My daughter's 59. She's divorced 2.5 years ago after 20-plus years of marriage. She is disabled and hasn't worked for the past 15 years. Her ex is still working and is highly paid. Can my daughter access her ex's Social Security benefits now? No. To qualify for spousal benefits, a person must be 62 or older, so your daughter must wait until then to collect off her ex-husband's record. Her ex must also be at least 62 for her to collect as a divorced spouse. Your daughter, however, might consider filing for disability benefits. It sounds like she would not be due Social Security disability benefits, since applicants must have worked and paid Social Security taxes in 5 of the past 10 years. But if she has little or no income and few assets, she might be due monthly supplemental security income disability payments. She should call Social Security at 800-772-1213 to check into this. If your daughter does get SSI, she'll have to file for her divorced spouse benefits at 62. Her SSI payment will then be adjusted accordingly. Now for another money-saving tip or two. For travel, book travel through shopping portals. You may not think of cashback sites like Rakuten or Ibotta as your first stop for booking travel, but they often have deals and cashback offers for hotels, car rentals, and tours, advises Katie Corrigan, Travel Partnerships Manager at Upgraded Points. And sign up for deal newsletters. Many online travel agencies and points blogs send out daily or weekly emails highlighting the best current deals across the web. A few to check out: Going.com, UpgradedPoints.com, and TravelPirates.com. Well, folks, we have once again run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I do hope you've enjoyed listening, and please join me next time. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.